Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Must Be the Place, the Building Science Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. Each episode is a deep conversation with a carefully chosen peer about not just houses, but place. Yeah, of course we talk about houses and retrofits, but we also want to change the industry for the better, forever. Energy poverty, community engagement, industry disruption, societal responsibility, and climate change. It's all here and so much more. We're back with This Must Be the Place, your Building Science Podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Henderson. My guest today is Chelsea Thomas, the founder and owner of Sol Invictus, energy consulting for builders and homeowners specializing in high-performance net zero and passive house. Her firm serves Western Canada for residential energy efficiency, and her passion for sustainable construction and her passion to help others stemmed from her own experience in constructing Central Alberta's first net zero passive solar home. In 2020, she won Business of the Year for Young Entrepreneur. Welcome to the podcast, Chelsea. We finally meet.
Thank you for having me, Sean. I appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, we've done a lot of backing and forthing over the years on Facebook without actually exchanging names. It's only been Blue House Energy and Sol Invictus. And then we're like, oh, hey.
I think I might be like a top fan of Blue House Energy.
You are. I love it. Yes, I love it. I think it's reciprocal.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's great.
So the first question I have for you is, where does the passion for energy efficient houses come from?
That's a good question. It started about 6 years ago. And prior to that, I had no idea anything about energy efficiency in housing. It was a total fluke that I even got into the industry at all. It actually started my passion for in this realm of things, I guess, kind of started with the solar energy. And that's one of the visible portions of high-performance homes, the net zero homes that you see. And so that is really easy for, you know, people to grasp. Right. That's what I hung on to.
It's the sexy part.
It really is. I mean,
you want to go over and see my PV panel?
I mean, I have used that line, I think, on some friends and family members.
Mm-hmm. I use it all the time.
But yeah, so I started to develop a small company related to solar in my master's, and we were also building our own house, and we were exploring some alternative building designs, even some as out of the world as Earthships, which of course didn't pan out. But we ended up having problems finding consultants in high-performance building. And so I ended up exploring that further while I was doing my master's program, took my EA certification through Enercan and Passive House Consulting through Passive House Canada, and consulted on our own project, which I'm currently in. And after that, we just snuck in at the right time once I learned, you know, Hot 2000 and other modeling strategies. At the right time when the building codes changed here in Alberta, and the market was basically wide open at that point. And now 6 years, like five and a half, six years later, we're working out of multiple provinces, and I love my job that I never knew existed.
So I understand that Sol Invictus is not a regular business. It's actually a social enterprise.
You got it. Yeah.
Super exciting. And so the theme that we're working on is kind of like, how do we get out of our own way? And so I think this is like looking at different business models as part of that.
Many people within our field are not business majors. They're not, mm-hmm. their focus is not business development. And I had no idea about running a business at all, completely green to the whole situation. But I wanted to ensure that the values that I started with and continued forward with were continuously aligned with social and environmental goals. And so we are a for-profit social enterprise. However, we're in the process at the very tail end of becoming B Corp certified. So it's the legal entity that enforces our goals for incorporating our environmental and social mandates as a business.
A few of the other folks that we do business with are B Corps. And
that's awesome.
We're going to be looking into that as well.
I can help. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. I like that. So how does using a social enterprise as your business model, how does that differ from a regular standard issue for-profit organization?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think people know the difference.
Instead of being strictly revenue generating, we do look at all other aspects that affect our community, our local environment, as well as our employees. So some examples is, one of the founding objectives that is kind of near and dear to my heart is education. And so we are working with organizations here locally in Central Alberta, such as Red Deer Polytechnic, City of Red Deer, Rethink Red Deer, to do energy literacy. Mm-hmm. So we do workshops with homeowners and other groups in order for them to have a better understanding of how to reduce energy in their homes. I do free training sessions and workshops with other organizations like Manpower to explain how people can even get into the industry. Like I said, I didn't know anything about this before I got in, and nobody else does. So I'm happy to share the knowledge. We also, of course, because our home office is net zero, we got a few extra bonus points on that. Other aspects of just running the business that accounts for our environmental sustainability is sourcing from other companies and groups that also have that on their radar. We make sure that we're paying our employees living wages. There's other benefits like additional time offs for charitable work, such as working for Habitat for Humanity, which we support. And so if our employees want to go out and, do some nailing and put up some walls for us, that will be totally within our employee handbook that we support that paid time off.
Nice. Right on. Yeah, I think there's a lot of really positive things about a social enterprise model that could use a lot more airtime. And because, like you said, I don't think that, there's very few builders who are business minded, right? If you're a good contractor, a good builder, you're not necessarily a business manager.
No.
You're really good at what you do. And then most of the time, everybody's just so crazy busy that they just make money or keep busy, maybe make money. They're probably losing a lot of money and leaving a lot of money on the table because they don't know where the gaps are. And they don't know a lot of times marketing skills. Digital marketing is much different than it was in the past. And all those things. So, it's stuff that you and I are also dealing with, right? In our worlds as well. And even if somebody who's been in business for a long time now, in various ways, is still learning. I'm still learning. It's always a learning process. I think the social enterprise piece can really help to broaden the base for a business.
Absolutely. It's it can refocus businesses to appreciate other aspects of growth that may not necessarily lead to additional revenue. But honestly, I look at it as we're a small business. There's only a few of us. We are rapidly growing, and it was easy for us to accommodate these B Corp requirements into a small business and say one that's already quite established. Mm-hmm. However, we do look at it as well as a marketing tool. You can't help but utilize that. I know there's no other B Corp certified companies here in Central Alberta. There's definitely very few that are even in the building space. I know there's one up in Edmonton that just got certified, Eflamo, and great for them. Love to work with them someday if I can put that out there. But I look at these businesses of that they're really pushing ahead and they're walking the talk. And we are doing that as well.
Cool. So you said earlier that you were doing your master's degree and building a house at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also pregnant.
Oh, I was going to say the only way you could make that more challenging would be to have a baby or be pregnant. So, wow. Yeah. So the Thomas House, which is your house, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So,
I mean, or a lot. I'm good.
Sure. Yeah. Like you said, it's Central Alberta's first passive solar net zero house. We're not passive house certified. I mean, we could get, there's a lower rung certification, but I'll be honest, I have so little time to be able to refocus and try and get through certification, even on the lower end. It's not on my radar at this point, but we're actually net positive depending on the year. I've ran a ton of our solar generation and consumption numbers. We're in a good space right now financially with this project to be able to show that it is a financially viable demo site for the community. So that's really the purpose of this, because the numbers talk. And so last year we generated $3,000 over our consumption by making use of Swap Power's solar program. Now, what that means is we're in the summer when we're overgenerating, we're purchasing and selling our solar credits at a higher rate. And then in the wintertime, we're purchasing and selling at the lower rate. So that $3,000 helped offset our transmission and distribution fees over the course of the year. So we were actually we were at zero operating costs for the year. I haven't done more recent numbers out of the last year, so I'm still generating this year's numbers, but this should be about the same, I'd say.
That's great. It really is a great indicator. That's, you know, like the flatline ongoing operating costs make it worth potentially having a higher mortgage, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I did account for the additional premiums incurred in adding extra insulation, high efficiency mechanical equipment, high efficiency appliances, the consulting that we did, and alternative building materials. All of that on the long-term payback period, I think we're looking at about 17 years with updated numbers based on more recent generation consumption data. So 17 years for us is like we were already in the house for about 5 years. So we have another 12 years before our premiums associated to those upgrades are paid off. It's a blink of an eye. And so a lot of these homeowners that, like, I get pushback with builders sometimes that are looking into this and they're like, well, you know, homeowners are only staying in their houses when they build them for about 5 or 6 years and then they want to resell them.
Well, that's not true.
Well, and it also, like, why wouldn't you want to have all these advantages and only have now a 10-year payback? Like, it's so sellable.
Right.
There is a great marketing tool that's really missing in this industry.
Well, and so I got two things, and I said this, I think, before on the podcast. The actual 10-year, how long people actually own houses for in Canada, is 13 years. But if you're building now to code, and you think you're going to sell in 5 years when code is going to be in the tiered range, you need to be building tiered now.
I agree.
Because, you know, 5 years from now, you're going to be up against houses that are way better performing and it's going to be hard to sell your energy pig.
Yeah, especially when, you know, energy labels come into play with the resale. Mm-hmm. You're going to have a neighbor maybe down the road that their house is performing better. But otherwise, we have very similar specifications, floor plans, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's going to be a challenge to overcome.
Yeah, it's going to be big. So I think that's a really strong marketing piece for the whole industry. Like, that's where we should be driving people is like, yes, it's going to cost you a little bit more now, but you will get, not only do you get the savings on your energy use currently, but you're also going to get a bigger, a shorter sales cycle and a bigger bang for your dollar when you sell it. better value.
Yeah. Not including all the other advantages of, you know, these higher performance homes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that you're in the Western region of Canada, and you're right, you know, you're up against the oil patch and a whole culture that's kind of, I don't know, what has we say it? opposed to clean energy, not opposed, but antithesis of clean energy. And that's probably been a huge challenge culturally. Like, how do you leap over that or engage with folks?
Luckily, that is a real tough one. When we're out, you know, at say the home shows, you know, we're not trying to stuff information down people's throats, and you know, like we don't have like our, we have solar bumper stickers on our car. We don't want to get keyed. So the culture, yes, with the oil field feels like it is an uphill battle, and there is a lot of challenges in that regard. However, there's also a lot of early adopters and people that are passionate about technology, especially. We also are facing consequences of climate change, and our urban centers are really a lot more liberal than people would think. And so that being said, we do have a lot of opportunity to use some of that momentum in order to make cultural change. Plus with the financial aspect and solar being so cheap and easily accessible, you have the grants available. We're starting to see solar on more and more roofs, and thus higher performance homes catching up to the visual. So I think that there's challenges, but there's a lot of opportunity there as well.
And do you see that there's like our folks in your region able to wrap their heads around the idea of net zero?
No, that needs a lot more exposure. As you are well aware, the top-down approach with codes and regulations doesn't necessarily help with the marketing aspect. A lot of our clients, unfortunately, are going to be drug along to adopt their strategies in order to ensure that they're meeting codes for new construction. And that is difficult to do. I think that I'll give you an antidote. So I have a client here. I was just talking to him. He's actually not even a client yet, really. But he was. We did a little work, subcontracted on this project, and he came to us later down the road to inquire about adding solar to his brand new house. And this is the regular conversation we have. We get pulled in at the end of projects all the time when we should be pulled in at the beginning. He expressed, we talked probably about an hour regarding his Tesla car, how much he loved it, how enthusiastic he was about the technology that's built in, how much he saves on like not using gas, and how he has no problems actually using it in a very cold climate like he's in Saskatchewan. And he was wondering, you know, like, he has this car and he has all this like amazing technology built in. It performs so well. And he also wanted his home to do the same. And the conversation was really halted by his builder from the get-go. You know, like, you don't have money in your budget for it. It's too difficult to do. And also, there just wasn't a lot of knowledge, I think, from the upfront from his builder in order to even get to that point.
Right.
And he was kind of dissatisfied with the approach that was taken in his whole project, because he wanted to have something that was sustainable, incorporated solar energy, and was high performing and comfortable, of course, and something that suited his needs for the future. And even something as you know, as easy to do as just a blower door test, I received pushback from his builder on. You know, they stated that they were building well above code. I knew it was at code. And, you know, this is not a unique conversation. I hear it all the time.
I've heard it for 30 years.
Exactly.
Just like in our 2000 house. So yeah, prove it. How are you going to prove to me and to yourself and to your client that that's what you're building? If you
that's exactly what
they do any benchmarking.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I would love to pick their brains and understand their challenges to meeting these easy upsells. Like this guy, like would have went through probably a few more hoops and ladders to build better. This project could have generated more revenue for the builder. It could have been, you know, a marketing opportunity.
Right.
Plus the client would have just been overall more happy with the result. But this opportunity just wasn't taken. And even with my slight intervention, it still wasn't taken. And at the end of the day, he's not going to get exactly what he wants in his house by the new coach change is already going to be probably not meeting it. So that's in a year.
Right. Right. And I think that's really a huge lesson to be learned for anybody who is looking to the future and what they're going to do is like, well, we have a year really before we need to level up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And here in Nova Scotia, we have a little bit more bench depth in terms of builders who can do that level up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's because we were a real strong adopter of the R2000 program from the get-go. And so, and because of the earlier than national code energy conservation measures that were put in the Nova Scotia code, people have been accustomed to the performance path.
Yep.
So I think it's somewhere close to, it's between 50 and 60% of all new construction in Nova Scotia has a blower door test done on it because they go through the performance path.
That's amazing.
And out of those, most of them are hitting, this is old data, but we're hitting that ERS 80 to 84 mark.
Yeah.
So a significant portion of new builds in Nova Scotia would already be at that next tier energy requirement, which is great news for us in general, but we have a very small market.
That's true.
So saturation can happen quickly when you're in a big market, then you have some significant hurdles to get over.
Yeah. I think just based on what I know about, you know, some of our clients, I think that there is a few of them that really stand out and they're already ahead of the game and they're doing some very unique and interesting things with their designs. And we absolutely support them because we want to continue to work with these forward-thinking clients. And then on the other hand, we have other ones that I think need a lot of support.
Excuse me, when you say clients, are you talking about builders or are you talking about homeowners?
Mostly, most of our clients are builders.
So every client you touch then is not just a one-off. It's more like if you can bring them to success, then there's going to be more houses that are high performance.
Exactly.
Right. And so you're a big game changer.
Well, I'm hoping to be more of a big game changer. That's the plan. And I would like to, you know, I'd like to have a lot more buy-in here in Central Alberta and some of the other regions we work in to, you know, really understand the benefits without having to be pulled from the top up. We need a bottom-up approach within our industry. And you know, that's what I and myself and other, you know, forward-thinking energy consultants are doing here in the region.
Right. Yeah, it's been something that's always been, I mean, it's mainly why I started up Blue House Energy was because we need to get that information out to folks in the industry who, like the trickle-down piece of, you know, the CEO or the principal of the company taking a course and the company getting licensed. Okay, so if your builder is a builder first and then a business owner, they are like way down on their list of things that they have been exposed to doing is training. So this is like we've learned over the years, right? Or at least I don't know. I think there's a whole raft of folks who have learned over the years that the top-down sort of trickle-down education approach isn't working because we still have people coming in and saying, I'm building just like a, you know, an R2000 house, but I'm not going to do a blower door test or, you know, you don't need to have Ah, you don't need to have triple pane windows in a cold climate. These ones will do just fine. And they're like, you know, bottom of the line contractor windows. It's like, we're not learning anything here. Like, let's get the people who are in the field doing the work, get them inexpensive, just in time information they need to move themselves forward. That's
exactly
about what we do.
Exactly. And I totally understand because, you know, it's not the owner of the company that's punching holes in drywall and not telling, or, you know, punching holes in air barrier systems and not telling anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the guys that really need a little bit of up-training and need to understand the consequences of, decision-making. Yeah. So the more opportunity we have to be able to provide access to training for these guys that are really making, you know, the decisions on the job site. Then we're just going to be able to meet our energy targets on each project a lot more thoroughly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then using tools like construction instruction that are, you know, an app on your phone where you can actually see the visual of how something's supposed to go together. And it doesn't use any language. So it's basically a universal tool on the site. So you could actually send somebody that information. The only downside of that is that most of their details or all of their details are US based. And so there are some things that are slightly different for us here in Canada, but it's still a really good tool. You know, those kinds of things, like we just need to be like pushing everything out the door at here, you know, your crew should have these tools in their phone, as well as these tools in their kit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a question for you. I know we were talking about how you didn't come in on this project you were talking about with a fellow with a Tesla. Would you, if you could get in on those early planning stages, like, what do you want builders and homeowners to actually do?
Well, the best case scenario is before they've even started drawing up plans with their designer and just have, you know, even just like a quick meeting with myself and them and whoever they want on their team. If they even have a designer chosen at that point, that'd be great. But even just a one-on-one with a homeowner and builder to kind of go through what their end goal is. And so the end goal could be, the house I live in right now, it's got a lot of cold spots and I just want to make sure we're not having that problem in the future. Or it could be the house I live in uses so much electricity and our bills are super high. How can we compensate for that? Or it could be all the way to, you know, like I'm super enthusiastic about solar. I want to protect myself from power outages. How can we incorporate something like that? Mm-hmm. And we can design solutions for any of these problems while incorporating their other team members, like the designer, builder, HVAC, plumber, electrician, all these guys, so that we can make sure that we're meeting, you know, the concerns of the client and make sure that they're happy. Because if you lose, you know, you're not going to build a house without your plumber, an electrician, and your designer. But you can, unfortunately, you can still build a house without an energy consultant at this point.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah. And so it's interesting because it's always this dynamic of you need to have builders on site and then you need to have a homeowners on site. And one of them is going to, there's going to be a push pull in terms of marketing, right? So the owner who is doing that pushing and who is doing the pulling is always an interesting conversation to have. But certainly the more that we can give homeowners a basic education or, you know, list of requirements, helpful lists of requirements, like checklists saying, do you want this, this, and this? Do you want to have lower energy bills? Do you want to have more comfortable living space? Do you want to have solar? Like, you need those checkoffs. And then when you go to a builder, these are the things you can ask them. And then, you know, and then to the builder say, you're going to get these questions because they're coming up in the building code and people are interested in them. So have answers for them and have proactive answers for them in your marketing and those kinds of things. So it's that push and pull is endless. Well, maybe
exactly.
Not endless.
Exactly. And actually, like, you know, while I'm doing a little bit of reconfiguring in my own business, I have more time to spend educating our clients and doing some more one-on-one. But I have worked with some sales staff before, and they are really receptive to understanding on how to sell, you know, the performance aspects of a home, even if it's just minimum code. They do appreciate having that information because, you know, it's not just about having a high efficiency furnace. People don't understand that there is other benefits to, you know, that they're inputting things like in a new build that you may not have had in a build 20 years ago that do make differences. And then on top of that, those conventional items, there is upgrades from there. You don't have to stick with a natural gas furnace. You don't have to stick with a natural gas hot water system. There is alternatives to what is being done. And I don't know if the builders are offering it up front or if it's just as requested, because if it's as requested, the consumers don't even know what they want or what the options are at all.
Right. And so, there's just such a huge amount of misinformation out there in terms of what, you know, I mean, I can't imagine counting up the times I've heard that heat pumps don't work in cold climates.
Yeah.
And I would have said that, like, I did say that many years ago, like in the mid 90s, when it didn't make sense to put in a heat pump in a cold climate because they were not made for cold climates. But
Exactly. Now
we have cold climate heat pumps and they work fantastically. So this is a completely valid option nowadays. So let's go for it.
Totally. Totally. I'd like to be a secret shopper. So go into some of these show homes and talk to the sales staff and just see, you know, touch base and see what they have to say about alternatives.
Yeah, it would be interesting. It would be very interesting. I have a funny story to tell about one of my very first clients. She is from South Carolina, living here in Nova Scotia. And we had spent a couple of months, you know, time over a couple of period of a couple of months, actually going through all the details that they wanted in the house. And I had given them lots of information, and she was a great researcher and a great reader and just really wanted to make sure she was making all the right decisions. And so we ended up going to the home show together. And I just sort of, you know, followed her around.
Yep.
And so that we would have a chance to talk about things as they came across. And she was absolutely brutal. It was great because she walked in there and go,
"Now, you know, can you tell me about your, you know, your windows? I've heard that there are some interesting windows out here." And she put on this Southern Belle thing. And I don't know if you've ever heard a Southern woman say, "Oh, bless your heart, you sweet summer child." It means you got blasted with a fire hose.
Well, she essentially did that to these, you know, these burly guys who were looking at this cute little blonde woman and her sweet little accent. And they would say basically the equivalent of patting her on the head and saying, "Don't worry, little lady, I'll handle it." And then she would just basically give them this giant uppercut of like, "Here's what I know about your product, and it's shit."
I would have loved to be a fly on the wall.
And I was like, "Oh, I just want to do this like every single time."
Oh my gosh! Oh my goodness!
That is awesome.
It was like, and she was, well, I guess she's about 10 years older than I am. So at the time, I was, and this quite several years ago. So I was quite young. And I didn't have the guts to actually do that. But she kind of opened the door for me. And then I've been an unstoppable force. But I can't fake the South Carolina accent. So I can't do that piece.
That's okay. There's alternatives.
My producer says that you have or are building a solid network of female energy advisors.
It's not official. It's fairly loose, but what I have done is I am like looking for support in this industry while also simultaneously wanting to be a role model for others that are up and coming. Mm-hmm. Because I know Man, being an energy advisor, an independent one, not working for a service organization, is such an uphill battle. There's 1,000 barriers that they put in place to not make it easy. And on top of that, being a woman in the industry and construction in general is difficult. But as an energy advisor, we are still a smaller portion, so much that we have our special little group through Casey, which I do intend on, you know, going to more, but it's during bedtime hours for the children.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, so I have started networking and we're working with other energy advisors, women that are, you know, mostly across Western Canada, to be able to build that network. And it's not just, you know, like, I'd like to work with you or we can do work for you. Please tell me if you need support, because I would like to, you know, help them run their own businesses better and overcome their challenges. Even if I can't help, even just to be an ear to listen, because I have been given that opportunity from other people. We have a mutual friend. She's been there for me. I called her yesterday about a challenge, you know, like a question related to employees. And she gave me her sound advice and I'm going to take it. My other mentor.
You're talking about Amalie Caron. She was been a guest here as well.
Yeah. She's great and very helpful. And she's, you know, a force to be reckoned with within the industry. She's got a great reputation. And I look at her where I want to be where she is in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it is totally doable. And she's totally helped me out without any strings attached. And I have felt that and it's been great.
Right.
Now I have another mentor that I work with, Kim Walton, Boak Row Design here in Alberta. And she has been with me since when I did my master's and I was required to find a mentor. She really helped me out much during that period, just because I wasn't really requiring for help. We were kind of on different paths at that time, but as soon as I got into energy modeling, our paths aligned and I've been working with her very closely since. And you know, she's also a force to be reckoned with it within her niche part of the industry and past the house. And I look at these women like, wow, like they really have been pioneering in the energy consulting world. Mm-hmm. And I hope to be where they are. And then let's all bring all the rest of the women that we can up with us, because there is so much opportunity here for us all to work together. And yeah, I just think I love my job and I just hope more women get involved in it.
Yeah, I tell you, I became an R2000 inspector in 1991, and then got into the energy advisor piece. And I really, like, I was often the only woman that I saw on any site for, you know, for months and months and months. So I really am super excited to hear that there's more women involved and, you know, it's still a small proportion, but the caliber of people who are coming into the field, you know, I mean, you know, I think of Allison Conroy with Pelican and Consulting. She's doing a PhD on double stud walls.
Amazing.
Chelsea, you've a couple of times referred to your master's. What was your focus of study for your master's?
The environmental management. So I focused on, I did the sustainability stream. And it was out of Western State Colorado University. It was kind of nice. It was a new, fresh program with a lot of young instructors. And they were all very enthusiastic. And the culture was really interesting in that it was totally different from what I'm used to here, but it was very mountainy. And I among probably 2 other students were focused on renewable energy. And they let us do, it's project-based. At the end of the term or at like the 2 years, we were able to develop our own projects. And so that was the foundation of my business, was
cool.
Developing the small social enterprise. We just transitioned from solar to efficiency.
Without losing the solar.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
We still have that component.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I would absolutely love to promote, help, support, et cetera. And you have tons of business experience now. I can flag all the places and things that you shouldn't do because they're not money makers.
Exactly.
Or you're going to shoot yourself in the foot, or you're going to lose money because you didn't think about this or that. So, yeah. And I think that that's one of the really big things that we need to get into this industry is like, where are you leaving money on the table?
Yeah, I still am exploring that myself.
Yeah. Well, I think it's an ongoing thing, right? You fix one thing and something else breaks. And it's like, oh, okay. So,
or you get focused on something. Yeah, you get focused on something that's like a time sucker and not even remotely beneficial to your business.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yes. Oh, I love this spreadsheet. I'm making so many cool functions in it. And it's showing me how all this energy entwines with this money. And then it's like 3 days later and it's like, oh, I didn't make any sales.
No,
but I have
no.
A cool website. I have a cool, not a website, but I have a cool spreadsheet.
And all the fonts are beautiful and the colors. Yeah, very gratifying. I'm a spreadsheet lover as well. I have a chicken spreadsheet. I'm back to my chicken purchases by cuteness, egg color, like length of, you know, their lifespan. Yeah. So I get it.
I have one for apple trees and tomato plants.
Oh my goodness. We're Excel nerds.
Oh my God. Yeah. I just, you know, it just transfers from one realm to another.
It really does.
So I have two questions that I ask everybody towards the end of the conversation. So here's the first one. What is your favorite, all-time favorite? Like, seriously, the thing that you love, the nerdy, delightful thing about building science that just, like, besides, you know, Excel spreadsheet.
This may not answer your question exactly because I find joy in the people part of my business. And so, and as I mentioned, like on the educational side of things, I really find value in that. And so I like inspiring other people to see the value in, you know, building science and the consequences of good decision making. When I can get, you know, a homeowner or a client really excited about it, that's what makes me super excited as well. Like, it's just, it builds upon, you know, our excitedness, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer because that's the key to, like, passion is the key to making change.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah. Cool. So the next question is, what's the building science BS, myth, stereotype, misinformation that drives you crazy?
Well, we still hear this. Building tights is a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have people that don't care about blow door testing. They don't care about results of their blow door testing. They don't necessarily want to manage their ventilation systems properly. And, you know, there is consequences to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that old, I guess, outlook on, you know, retaining a loose building envelope to avoid those consequences, it's inevitably going to have to change because they're going to have to get with the program. They're going to have to start building tighter. They're going to start having to test, and they're going to have to start educating themselves on, you know, consequences if they're not ventilating properly, because otherwise they're going to be back at their clients' houses in 5 years because, you know, there's problems with moisture or, you know, other humidity issues or whatever else that comes with that. And that one inevitably, I think, will solve itself.
Thou shalt, right?
With yeah.
Building code. Thou shalt.
Exactly.
Yeah. As opposed to, well, you could do this and it would be nice. Yeah.
Yep.
But that is a very common answer to that question. Now, we had 36 episodes at the end of season two. So now we're finishing up season three. And I would say that probably 70% of people who I've asked have said, how does this have to breathe? That's what I hate.
Yep. Yeah, I know. Well, we're still facing this challenge, obviously. So
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing when you think of how long the life of the early mistakes of the R2000 program have had, right? So, you know, I still hear people say, I don't want to live in a plastic bag.
Oh, my. Like,
well, you're not really, but.
I mean, there's changes that have to occur in the mindsets of homeowners and clients, and that's part of why we're here. And you know, it in anything, information changes when you have new data. So as we saw over the course of a few years with new information, you know, plans change for the thing we shall not talk about. But it's the same thing with the building industry. Things have to change when we're faced with, you know, consequences of poor planning. And, you know, we don't necessarily know. I mean, we have probably a good idea about, you know, 10 years down the road, what the consequences of decisions made now are going to be. I doubt we'll have any surprises. I think it's kind of iron down. It is a science, but with any science, it does have to adapt.
Right.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. And I think that there have been enough failures and disasters over the years with what people thought was a good idea, but had unintended consequences. For example, air sealing house really tightly, but not controlling ventilation or providing controlled ventilation so that there weren't any issues with indoor air quality. And I think that there's a lot, we have so many more tools at play now, you know, in play now. We can use WOFI analysis to look at moisture issues. We couldn't do that before. I mean, we could take some educated guesses. We have things like the CBAT tool from within the Enercan suite of tools that allows us to say, in actual fact, if you do these changes, these energy conservation measures, add these in, you're going to save some money because look at this, this chart. And so they've done a really good work on that piece. There are some tools that we have in place now that are going to mean that we don't have to deal with unanticipated consequences because we've anticipated the consequence. Right.
Exactly.
We're actually maturing in terms of the building science industry and thought process. It's like, yeah, cool. That's a great idea. Don't forget about A, B, and C.
Exactly. We will wise up here soon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only taken a few decades, but you know, we're actually getting the sense that house is a system. What a concept.
I know. It really is. I know. I like to say it's not rocket science, it's building science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Chelsea. It's been great to talk to you finally and not do the tappity tap on the keyboard back and forth. So I really
will do that.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I have lots of things that
thank you.
We should talk about and collaborate on and scheme about.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's our episode for today. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. This episode was produced by Blue House Energy, Podcast Atlantic, and Tanya Media. Subscribe and don't miss an episode. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time.